Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Friday, February 24, 2017. I am Jason Powell. Coming up after the break, my full review of TNA Impact Wrestling. The wedding angle, the wedding of the century. That's what they were basically calling it. It was Laurel Van Ness and Braxton Sutter. We finally figured out what it was that Maria was holding over Braxton Sutter. Why he would go this far, leaving her at the altar. But why did he make it this far? What did she have on Allie? They almost made it seem, well, he was blackmailed, but it seemed like Maria had something on Allie. Well, it turns out that, no, she threatened to fire her. That was it. She was going to fire Allie. She couldn't go get another job. And for some reason, the idea was that if she fired Allie, then Sutter would never see her again. I don't know why he couldn't talk to Allie about this. None of this made any damn sense. The whole thing was ridiculous. At the same time, I don't remember the last time I've heard a TNA crowd as loud as they were during the wedding angle. The wedding angle was absurd. It was ridiculous. And on some level, it worked. you can't deny it. There's something about pro wrestling and wedding angles that people just, they can't get enough. And we'll see what the numbers are like, the viewership numbers. It wouldn't surprise me if they increase. Now, the thing that could keep it down, we'll see, is that it's Braxton Sutter. It's Allie. And I like Allie a lot, but this isn't like TNA's top stars or anything like that. I guess I'll be surprised if there's not an increase. The question I have now is just how much of an increase they get. But I guess I haven't paid close attention to see like what the competition was tonight, if they faced any special programming or anything like that. But they did not follow through with the wedding. In case you're wondering, Allie and Sutter, the real life married couple, ended up kissing at the end of the episode. We got more of Josh Matthews being goaded by the Pope, D'Angelo De Niro, who keeps telling him changes are coming, and this week started to indicate that the change isn't good for Josh. So it would seem, and Josh ended up getting ticked off at the end of the show and saying, "I'm out of here," and you could hear him drop the headsets. So it would certainly seem like they are going to be bringing in a different play-by-play voice. And they do have some options. I mean, if you think about it right now, Kevin Kelly left Ring of Honor. He is working with New Japan Pro Wrestling, doing the New Japan World broadcast in English. So I don't know if that's something that New Japan would be crazy about. Maybe Kevin Kelly doesn't care. I'm just throwing his name out there. The other one, the big one would be Jim Ross. And keep in mind that when Jeff Jarrett broadcast Wrestle Kingdom 10, he got Jim Ross involved. I think it would be a coup for TNA, Impact Wrestling, whatever the hell they're going to end up calling themselves, to bring in Jim Ross. I mean, absolutely. It sounded silly at one point. Keep in mind, it's new management, who apparently spent a fortune to get Josh Barnett. I don't have the number confirmed, so I won't put it out here, but the number I heard, I was like, are you freaking kidding me? But they do have some money, whether they have enough money to make it, I mean, they have enough money, the company does, whether they want to invest enough to bring in Jim Ross or not, whether he's interested, I don't know. I mean, keep in mind, he does the New Japan on Access shows too, but with Josh Barnett as his color commentator. The one that I guess if I had to pick a favorite in all of this, not a personal favorite, but a favorite that I think is the most likely candidate, Mike Tenay. They brought back, Jeff Jarrett's back in power. They brought back Scott D'Amore behind the scenes. They're kind of putting the band back together, it would seem. You have Dutch Mantel back. It is worth noting, though, Dutch Mantel and Jeff Jarrett were separate hires, so it wasn't like they were a package deal, but still, they're putting the band back together. It's weird because my big thing with Impact going forward, and I keep addressing this, is that I don't want them to think that everyone is longing for the good old days of TNA. They did 1.whatever million viewers. That's great. That's nice. It underachieved then. I don't think it's worth it. I don't think it's worth trying to bring back people who used to watch this show in that fashion. Give them something new. And I just fear that if you bring back the longtime voice of failure, unfortunately for Mike Tenay, he was the voice of a failed product. It feels like another step back. So are you going to try to sell us on new and improved and then bring back the voice of the failed promotion? I don't know. I mean, like I say, Jim Ross it would be huge for them, but I just, the idea of bringing back Mike Tenay, nothing against him, but I don't think it would be a wise move. And I know people are going to say, well, better than Josh Matthews. There's people out there that don't like Josh's work. To each his own. I just think it sends the wrong message that, hey, we're new and improved, but yeah, everything, we're bringing back everything from old TNA, the TNA that you know and love. But there's an audience out there that didn't know and love that TNA. We'll see what they do. We'll also see what role Josh Matthews plays. Is he staying with the company? He's been playing along on Twitter. He's been working this gimmick on Twitter, it would seem, with him heeling on fans and calling himself the best voice in history and bad-mouthing Tony Schiavone. I guess we can throw his name out there. He's doing a podcast now with Conrad Thompson. I don't think it will be Tony Schiavone, but we'll throw his name out there anyway. I mean, Josh seems like he's in heel mode. And if you were going to leave the company and just permanently, I don't know why you would do that. So is Josh going to be, I don't think he's going to be a character on the show. So is he going to be more of a heel voice on the broadcast team? Is he going to be the third man? I mean, Pope is kind of a heel. I don't know what Pope is. But is Josh Matthews going to stick around and kind of be that voice? Is you would think because like I say, if he were leaving, I don't think he'd be healing on everybody. I don't think that would be the course of action for Josh Matthews. I don't. It doesn't seem like sour grapes. It seems over the top enough that this is by design. And so I do think Josh Matthews is going to be around. If you were leaving, wouldn't you just say nothing? Wouldn't you just let your time run out, let him replace the guy? I mean, maybe you'd have some legit sour grapes and whatever, but I don't know that you'd take. I don't know that you'd be playing along like he is. So I just kind of assume there's going to be a role for him. I'm not crazy about a three-man booth. I don't know how Josh would do in that role. But yeah, I mean it's interesting. I mean they have my interest when it comes to, all right, if Josh is out as the play-by-play voice, who is in? Another question, if let's say just for the sake of argument that it is, well, no matter who it is, I was going to say if it's Jim Ross, but if it's Mike Tenay, I mean, can these guys work with the Pope? Not that the Pope is like the worst guy in history or anything like that. And if Josh is going to be like a third, and that's just a total shot in the dark that Josh is going to be involved, and it's a three-man booth. I mean, I'm not saying that can't work, but is it really going? You're going to get your best JR, for instance, if you have those guys as his wingmen. It's Jim Ross. He's going to make any broadcast better. Mike Tenay, I mean, I think they can coexist. I don't know that it's going to bring out the best in either guy if that's the approach they take. But we'll let this play out. We'll see. But a lot of things to talk about on this show. They're just bouncing all over. I'm ready for the new creative. Say what you will. I mean, I'm guardedly optimistic. I still think Jeff Jarrett has a lot to prove. I think everyone he's bringing back has a lot to prove. And I'm hoping that they can be successful. But I still think, like I said, there's just it isn't for me. This isn't. Oh, thank God, the glory days are here again. Jeff Jarrett's back. I just don't feel that way. But I'm ready for the change because what we've seen here this year so far, and granted, tough circumstances with all the questions and then eventually the sale of the company and all that. But what we've seen so far this year has been. It hasn't been as good as what we saw in 2016 from Impact as far as creative went. I thought it was their most consistent year creatively. What we've seen from the Hardys in 2017 hasn't been as good either. But they did open the show up with a graphic acknowledging the deaths, I should say, of George the Animal Steele, Chavo Guerrero Sr., Ivan Koloff, and Nicole Bass. So at least one company was willing to acknowledge all of the deaths. Then we had footage of broken Matt Hardy seeking advice from George Washington. That's his giraffe. And then he spoke with Vanguard One about his drinking. Then Jeff Hardy showed up, but he got there as fast as he could. Matt said the seven deities told him that they will transport him to an unknown place and he may not have his abilities. So he transferred his abilities to Jeff, who then had a premonition that Matt was going to Egypt. Matt teleported away. He came back in like Egyptian garb or something. And then they, well, we'll get to that in a little bit, but they had a video that focused on Braxton Sutter and Laurel Van Ness's wedding. And then Matthews and D'Angelo, of course, were on commentary. Opening segment, you get the return of Cody Rhodes. Well, just Cody, because WWE is dickish about that sort of thing. Cody and Brandi Rhodes headed to the ring together. Cody said that he heard his wife is known as Mini Moose in some circles, and he called for Moose to come out so he could personally thank him, and Moose did come out. And Cody, Matthews recalled a Cody tweet saying he 100% approved of Mini Moose. Cody brought up his family and said he basically thanked him on behalf of different family members and said that you're one of us. And then Moose recalled saying that Brandi has his number, and they both have his number, and they can call him if they ever need anything. Well, this changed Cody's demeanor. You have his number? So what we learned right there is that Cody Rhodes isn't watching Impact either. He's not alone. There's a lot of people. I know that sounds horrible, but it's not even a joke. When it comes to the talent on Impact, and not just in TNA, but in these other companies, it always comes across like these people aren't even watching the show they're on. Because it was a line he said last week. Moose tried to explain himself, but Cody ended up putting his hand up. And he said, so it's wrestling business relationship 101. You train together, you team together. What's next? You're going to sleep together? So Cody getting all fired up here. Moose said he did what he did as a friend. And Cody said, you're not a friend. You're a perfidious slut. Hope I pronounced that right. I cracked up. And then Brandi asked if Cody was joking, and he laughed, and yeah. And he gave his wife a kiss, and then he shook Moose's hand. But then all of a sudden he low-blowed Moose, and then Cody attacked Moose. Brandi was trying to plead with Cody to stop, ended up giving Moose crossroads, and then Brandi was asking Moose if he was okay. And De Niro snuck in that Cody's become a nightmare, which is a reference to his American Nightmare gimmick. And then Brandi and Cody left the ring together. Brandi looked back at Moose with concern. This is Randy Savage, Macho Man and Elizabeth here. That's what this felt like night one. We'll see where it goes. Right now, Brandi looking sympathetic, and Cody just looks like the jealous husband, and much like Randy Savage did back in the day. And Elizabeth, you know, Moose isn't playing the George the Animal Steel role. It's not the exact same thing. But the way Brandi looked back, it looked like legit concern. It wouldn't make much sense for her to suddenly side with her husband. It's been a setup of Moose all along, because why would you bother to set up Moose? But this is wrestling. And keep in mind, there's been a creative change, so whatever direction things may appear to be going in, God only knows what's going to happen once March gets here and we get that next batch of tapings. But I like this. I mean, hey, Randy Savage, Elizabeth is iconic. It's been a long time since we've seen a real play on something like that, and it didn't feel like a ripoff by any means. It just felt like something that may have been inspired by that, or there's similarities by it. Without knowing where it's going, I really like night one. My only real concern here, though, is Cody. I really think TNA could use him as a babyface. I don't even know if they have that option. You know, Cody joining Bullet Club. He looked like he was going to enter Ring of Honor as a babyface. He's a heel there too. Now, granted, TNA doesn't have the same relationship, but it just looks like they want to be consistent. Where Cody, if he's on television, is going to be a heel. And so it looks like this was his heel turn. And I think he's going to be a very good one. Cody may be better long-term as a heel than he is as a babyface. But TNA needs that babyface star power. I think they're lacking that a bit. So I think, they're going to... That hurts just a little. Because I don't know that they necessarily have someone. But I like what they've done. Again, I thought night one was effective. Matthews recapped that after commercial break, and then they had a cameraman ask Cody what happened, and Cody just yelled, "Hey, get away from my wife! Get away!" So he's all fired up. Then we had a video package that focused on the split of Eli Drake and Tyrus. We got some comments from both men. This was simple, but it worked, because the thing I liked about it, just kind of without just going, "Hey, here's a replay of what happened," you actually get to hear from both guys, and you get to see some of the footage. It was brief. I mean, it's Drake and Tyrus. So this is, it's gonna may sound like a weird comparison, but it did. There was a, it reminded me a little bit of what you'll see before a UFC fight, when both guys are, the video package of both guys talking and things like that to set it up. Not exactly the same by any means, but it just, I wish we would see more of this in wrestling rather than just your standard video package. Because these guys were about to have a match. I mean, they could have used this later in the show, certainly with Josh Barnett and his opponent. But I wish we'd see this a lot more because not everybody sees every show. And those replays, I mean, you see so many of them that you just start to zone out after a while. Where this keeps it fresh, it's the same footage that they would show, but you get new commentary on it, you get promos over it. And so I think that that's effective. We ended up with, from there, we went to what was supposed to be Tyrus and Eli Drake. Yeah, Drake cutting a long promo on the way to the ring, talking about Tyrus being the biggest dummy of them all. He said he knows Tyrus would do the right thing because they're both businessmen. And he tried to give him the finger poke of doom. That's right, he just tapped him with his finger, expected Tyrus to lay down. Didn't do it the first time, tried it again. Tyrus didn't lay down. Tyrus gave it back to him and told Drake to lay down. And Drake said if Tyrus wants to get paid again, and then he has to lay down. Tyrus kind of growled and flexed. I don't know what that was all about. Drake said that, all right, we'll do it the hard way. And then he punched referee Earl Hebner. I guess that was the end of the match. I just labeled it a no contest in 2 minutes. And then Drake was laughing about punching Hebner. Tyrus grabbed him by the throat, and Drake told Tyrus, hey, I got your raise. And he offered him a handshake. Tyrus took the mic and said that he would never shake his hand, but I'll give you a hug. So this was just weird. I like Drake and Tyrus together. The idea of going babyface with Tyrus, it's like, well, you could. I don't really know what you're going to get out of it. I think he is better off being someone's heavy, someone's muscle. And so I like that they're together. I just don't know why they went. I think they, this just felt like overbooked silliness of they're going to break up, but they're not. And the crowd really wasn't receptive to any of it. It wasn't like there was mega heat coming out of this or anything. And that's when Pope snuck in a line saying, this won't happen once new management takes over and puts their fingerprints on the product. So new management's going to be able to assure that. Anyway, Matthews asked how Pope knows this. And Pope said that the Anthem Owl talks to him. They showed us Laurel Van Ness preparing for her wedding with Maria and Sienna. Maria was asking where Allie was, and Sienna said she hadn't seen her. And Van Ness asked, why do you care? And Maria laughed all wickedly at about Allie being the ring bearer. And Sienna said she would call her and get her there in 2 minutes flat. And they went to a commercial. When they came back, they went to the Hardy compound. And they had a gold-painted boat that teleported back from wherever Matt was, I guess in Egypt. And Jeff was worried that, my God, my brother's been replaced by a boat. Well, no. Matt came back moments later, and he said he possesses characteristics of his first ever vessel. He named it, didn't care. He said that he was the king of gold, and now he knows how to be successful in their expedition for gold. Hardy said Skarsgård is no longer a dilapidated boat. He is now a golden ark that will house all of the tag titles they win. And then both Hardys teleported off to their next expedition. All right, well, I guess having a boat for your collection of shitty tag titles is better than the burlap sack that I think they used last week. Anyhow, it's a golden boat. We'll talk more about the Hardys as we go on here. Jade delivered an in-ring promo. My first reaction was, ooh, but she did really well here. It was kind of a rough start for her, but she seemed to gain confidence as this went along. She called out Rosemary, and Rosemary talked about how Decay has finished with Jade because Jade wanted another match. And she responded by saying, well, that's fine, but I'm not done with Ryu. And then Jade said she took everything Rosemary had to throw at her in their Monsters Ball match, and she's still standing. And she just asked, does it piss you off that I'm still standing here? Do you still want to get rid of me? And Rosemary kind of had her evil smile and nodded. And Jade challenged her to one more match, a last woman standing match. May have been, I don't know if she said last man or last woman, but I labeled the last woman standing match. And Rosemary complied. She agreed to the match. And then Jade said they were playing her game now, and the belt is coming home with her. Again, the crowd was more receptive to Jade here. I think she did she just seemed more comfortable. She could be someone others people. There's been a noticeable decline in some of the dialogue this so far this year, and I think it's because of the departure of Dave Lagana, who was well. In fact, I know it is because he was the guy that was in charge of that. And now I pointed out critics have said that. Not critics, but people within the company have said that, well, one of the advantages of this is that talent has more freedom now. Lagana was someone who wanted people to stick to their scripts, to what he wrote, where now the talent has a little more freedom to put things in their own words, apparently. And I've said, it's just two different ways of doing it. I think you could see things be a little rough early on, but. It's the wrestlers, if they do now kind of have a chance to put things in their own words, it could benefit some long term. There's going to be some better at this than others. And in Jade's case, we may find out she benefits from it because it always seemed like she was someone who really struggled with it. It just never felt right that she was trying to be this nice girl baby face. Just kind of there really was nothing to her, and she always felt. It felt awkward to see her try. She comes off as somebody who's a little more rough around the edges than the squeaky clean baby face that they wanted her to be. And so I don't know if this was a product of that, of her just kind of being able to put things in her own words and coming off better or not. But yeah, I mean, overall, it's been kind of a rocky road with some of the dialogue we've seen so far this year. And the other part, I guess. One thing, the only thing I really didn't like, and this may sound like nitpicking, but I think it's important. She asked for one more match. We're not at a point where it's like they should even be teasing the idea that this is the last one. Why plant that in people's head? Because it's not going to be. And what it does is the next time you go back to it, oh, they already said one more match. I mean, what is this, their second major showdown type match that they'll be having? So when you talk about one more match, and it may have just been a poor choice of words on her part, and maybe if she was sticking to a script, I guess would be the punchline there. But no, it did make me feel, it brought me back to all the times we've heard that on Raw, and just one more match, and then it's never is. Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, how many last matches did they have? Rosemary or Sasha and Charlotte, same thing. Now, TNA hasn't done that. It's not fair to like throw WWE's booking on them. But when I, yeah, like I said, when I hear one more match, like, well, don't say that. Challenge her to a match because then you planted that seed now that, ooh, this is it. This could be the last showdown between these two. And it's just way too soon for that to happen. They went backstage, and it looks like Braxton Sutter was trying to work himself up that to the point that he would finally tell Laurel that he didn't want to marry her. A drunken Mike Bennett showed up, gave him a pep talk. So is the miracle just a fraud? Because last week he was hanging out with frat boys, he's like, this is the miracle character? This doesn't. And this week he's just drunk, and he might as well have been one of the frat boys or something. I can't even say frat. What would you label the people he was hanging out with? It just didn't seem like it wasn't consistent with the Bennett character we'd seen thus far. Sutter started to talk about how everything, it all had to do with Allie. Bennett cut him off and said Maria had taken care of it, and then he handed them the bottle of booze before walking off. We went to the second match. It was Jesse Godders beating Bram, who had Kingston in his corner in 4 minutes. DCC can't win unless they have the numbers advantage, and even though Kingston tried to interfere, Godders was still able to. He ended up catapulting Bram into Kingston and then pinning Bram. DCC is horrible. It just make it go away. It's so unfortunate that Bram just continues to be slotted in these bad gimmicks, and they just it just seems like a guy who's got so much talent that they really haven't positioned well in the throughout the time that he's been there. Maybe briefly when he was doing his thing with Drew Galloway, and that's about it. This DCC thing though, yuck, awful. And Jesse Godders, this was kind of flat. I don't know where I don't know if they mentioned where James Storm was. If they did, I didn't catch it. One thing I did catch, remember the opening match when Earl Hebner was punched out? Yeah, well, guess who refereed the second match on the show? So he gets punched out by one of the wrestlers in match one, and I think it was Eli Drake punched him out. Well, he's right back out there working match two. I'm guessing it's just a product of them kind of chopping things up. I doubt that he worked two matches in a row. I could be wrong, but it might have just been them, kind of the way they edited the show and the match order, that sort of thing. The Hardys teleported to some independent wrestling locker room, asked about where the champions were. The Mid-Atlantic Outlaws showed up and said they were number one contenders, and Broken Matt said maybe they need to have a number one contenders match. Some other independent wrestler, and I think they said the names of the tag champions and the Mid-Atlantic Outlaws. I didn't really catch much from this. Well, anyway, this other wrestler stands up and starts speaking in favor of the Hardys and asks the Outlaws to give them a chance, and the Outlaws ended up shaking hands with the Hardys. So, yeah, I guess it was they gave up their shot at the tag titles or something for the Hardys to get theirs. I guess it was the idea. I'm sure the guys who were, you know, the indie wrestlers who were involved in this think it's great, but wouldn't it be even better if we actually heard their names and maybe saw graphics for them or something like that? Backstage, Maria scolded Allie for showing up late. Allie didn't want to be there. Laurel asked if she was upset that Sutter picked her instead of Allie. Maria told Allie she would be front and center holding the wedding bands, and Allie said it was horrible that she said it was horrible and she had to go. And Van Ness told Allie not to forget about her hotel room because she had a marriage to consummate. Allie ends up leaving the room, and then in the next room she sees Sutter. And Allie asked if he really wanted to do this, and Sutter told her that you don't understand, I have to do this. And she said he does not, and then she stormed off, and Sutter punched a wall. At that point, you know, I mean, well before this, a normal person would have said, hey, here's what she's holding over you. You know, she's going to fire you if I marry you, or if I don't marry Laurel. I mean, who would do it? It's just utterly ridiculous. They went back to the indie event, and the Hardys approached the champions in the locker room. One of the tag champs hit the wrestlers who spoke up on behalf of the Hardys earlier. There was just like, I guess it was supposed to be comically bad, but you have the Hardys and the champions kind of standing there, and then you have the other independent wrestlers doing this like comedically awful beatdown, just like throwing bad punches at each other, smiling. It was weird. And then they cut to the tag champs talking. Tonight it's a shoot, one of the tag champions told the other. I think they said their names. I didn't catch it. I don't think they really gained anything from this. Maybe if somebody in their town happens to see, like, hey, I know those guys, which is nice, but it's not much. Then we had footage from the Madison Civic Center. This is the top of the second hour now, and a graphic noted that the match was held in the Mid-Atlantic territory. All right. The Hardys won the match. They showed a lot of footage from it. They just had music playing in the background. The venue looked really good. I mean, it was indie-rific as far as the look of the ring is concerned, and just the footage. So it's not, I guess, not even just the venue, but kind of the footage being a little lower in quality. This whole Expedition for Gold thing isn't doing much for me. I think it's good for the Hardys. They get out there, and I'm sure they're getting paid pretty well to go to these independent events, and I'm sure independent promoters are marking out for their tag titles and ending up on Impact. These were some of the, speaking of indie-rific, some of the more indie-rific tag belts I've ever seen. But when they ended up teleporting back to the compound, and they put the super indie-rific tag title belts into their golden boat. So they win the titles, they just throw them in a boat. I'm not sure. I mean, I think the independent companies benefit from having the Hardys on their shows. Beyond that, are they getting this much out of it? One thing I wrote about in my review, I think it would be wise of these segments if the Hardys had like their. I mean, they have a scribe. Can't they have a play-by-play voice too that kind of calls the action on these things, and you can kind of do it in a comedic manner that kind of fits the tone of this, and that way they can talk about, kind of fill in some of the gaps of who the hell these people are that they're wrestling, where these people, what promotion this is. Just different things like that. And there's a way to do it if you have the right person. I wouldn't use anyone from TNA. I would, you know, go out of my way to find somebody outside and find the right person for it that can add the right comedic touch to it. I think that would help. It would, because, I mean, it's just a bunch of indie footage. You know, the Hardys beating some random guys at the Impact viewers, 99% of which, probably more, don't even know who the hell these opponents are. So at least if you had that, it would be another little hook, a little something extra. You're going to pay attention if the guy's comedic enough, then, you know, you're going to listen and get a couple of chuckles out of this. I'm not digging this. This expedition for gold thing, it's not making for great television. I haven't some of the stuff we. I mean, I kind of feel like this is starting to fade now, unfortunately, the broken universe, and they need something hot again. And I don't know that Matt teleporting and the golden boat, the golden ark now, and all of that. It just doesn't feel as fresh and as fun as a lot of the stuff we saw last year. Then they went to a Josh Barnett video package, and he spoke about taking the title from Lashley, who would then have to prove himself worthy of taking it from him. This guy hasn't even had a match yet in TNA, but he's getting a world title shot. We found that out. Next week, Josh Barnett is going for the TNA Championship. So TNA decided they're going to have him face Bad Bones. Fairly competitive match here. More competitive than I thought it would be. I mean, Barnett, there was no doubt Barnett was winning, and he did in 245. But they gave Bones a little bit. Bad Bones took a nasty power bomb. Barnett followed up with a Northern Light suplex and looked like I think it was a Kimura lock that he applied, some sort of arm lock, and got the win that way. He doesn't. I mean, I think Josh Barnett. It's weird. He comes out, goes right to the ring, wins his match. Goes right to the back, doesn't make eye contact with anyone in the crowd, doesn't smile. I think we're supposed to view him as kind of this ass-kicking machine. I mean, he is a legit former UFC champion and all of that, but there's no real charisma here. There's no, it's just he comes off very bland and not endearing. No, he's new to TNA. I'm sure there's some TNA fans who are aware of who he is, but I don't know why we're supposed to get excited about Josh Barnett beating Lashley, if just in theory next week, why would fans be excited about the idea of Barnett becoming TNA champion? Why are we even excited about him challenging for the TNA championship? This whole thing feels really rushed. It's strange that they brought him in. They've just got generic music for him and all of that, and he's already challenging for the title. I don't know if they overestimated the appeal of Josh Barnett as a former UFC champion or what it was, but I'm not feeling this at all. Hey, before we move on with the rest of the show, the wedding, the X Division title match, all of that, I do want to take a second and say that if you enjoy these long-form audio reviews that you hear sometimes here on the All Access side, know that the members on .net hear them for all the major television shows and the major pay-per-view events. So if you enjoy Impact, Raw, SmackDown, 205 Live, NXT, Ring of Honor, we are doing audio reviews of those major television shows every week for the .NET members. And for that matter, when Lucha Underground is airing first-run television shows, John Moore takes care of that for us. And then next week, coming up after the WWE pay-per-view, coming out of WWE Fastlane, Jake Barnett and I will get together for a full-length audio review of that show. So if you enjoy that here on the All Access side, you can get it on a weekly basis on the membership side, the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net. Visit the main page and click into the sign-up area for more details. Just remember, $7.50 is our monthly rate, and you can save money by taking the six-month or annual option. That annual option brings the price down $2 a month. Brings it down to an average of $5.50 per month. WrestleMania is coming up. Treat yourself and enjoy some of our long-form audio. And that's just the TV and pay-per-view reviews. We also have the .NET Weekly Audio Show, which Jake Barnett and I got together on Thursday and did. We talked all sorts of WWE storylines and where we think things may be going for WrestleMania. Got Jake's reaction to a lot of different things. The weekly show runs at least an hour and oftentimes more. Last week was the full-on TNA roster evaluation. We spoke about every member of the TNA roster, John Moore and I did. For that particular episode, we do that once a year for all the companies. We are behind on TNA just because of the creative shakeup and all of that, but we're now caught up, and you can hear all of our audio content from our entire history once you become a member. It's right there available for you, so more audio that I think you'll probably ever have a chance to listen to, but if you enjoy the roster evaluation, things like that, sign up for membership. Again, all the details available on the main page at ProWrestling.net, and if you have any questions, hit me up on Twitter, at Pro Wrestling Net. Coming out of a commercial break, the next match, which was only mentioned, I believe, right before the commercial break, it was Trevor Lee defeating DJZ in 4 minutes and 30 seconds to retain the X Division Championship. Gregory Shane Helms in the corner of Lee. It was fast-paced. It just, it I want the X Division Championship matches to feel a little more epic than 4 minutes and 30 seconds and end with a roll up and a handful of tights, and that's what this was. I also want DJZ to realize that bromance wasn't cool. He's a babyface now, and I keep waiting for him to abandon. Robbie E even is starting to move away from the bromance version of Robbie E. Jesse Godders has moved away from it. Yet DJZ, who seems like he's caught on more than either one of them, still, for some reason, you would think he would want people to forget his time as the synth player, whatever the hell he was for them, the wrestling DJ. I guess he was the DJ for them. He hits a Hurricane Rana, I think it was, off the ring apron, stands up, looks at the crowd, and goes, bum, 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 bum. He still thinks that's cool. It never was. It was annoying. Why do you want to remind people of that stretch of time when you didn't even really wrestle? You were just with the bromance. I would want everyone to forget that. He does this on a regular basis, and it's just baffling to me. But they did an angle after the match. They had Z striking Helms, and then Lee immediately catching Z with a good running knee, and then he placed Z's leg inside a chair. So he's about to do the concerto on his leg, and Z was already limping throughout the match, selling a previous knee injury. Out comes Andrew Everett, who just broke up with Trevor Lee and Shane Helms as the Helms Dynasty, and he ended up performing a springboard dropkick onto both Helms and Lee, and then he performed a really nice Frankensteiner on Trevor Lee, and then he played to the crowd, and the crowd was very receptive, so that was good to see. I think DJZ is ultimately going to be better off as a heel. The crowd is fairly receptive to him, though. I don't know that he's personality-wise. I just liked him more as a heel than I have as a babyface so far. But it was nice to see Everett at least get that nice, strong reaction, and hopefully they can do something, some sort of character development with him. We don't know much about Kim other than, I guess the idea is, well, you should like him more than you did when he was with the Helms Dynasty. But yeah, we still need something on this guy. Backstage, Maria asked Braxton Sutter if he was ready, and she said that she was there to remind him of why he was doing this. And Sutter said, "It's gotten so far out of control, it has to stop." And she said it would stop once he married Laurel, and then he would never have to think about Allie again. And he said, "If you don't marry Laurel, you know what will happen." Like, what, she's going to release Allie's porn tape? No, I she was like, what could it be? It'll be... I didn't have my hopes up, but yeah, the actual thing was pretty underwhelming. Maria said asked if she made herself clear, and Sutter said yes. And then he said, she said, let's get you married. And then Matthews hyped the wedding angle for after the break. They went to a commercial. Matthews hyping Lashley and Josh Barnett for the TNA Championship for the first time ever for next week's show. Can't say that it does anything for me. Well, I mean, well, hopefully they go out there and have a hell of a match. And by the end of it, we're going, hey, I like this Josh Barnett guy. But right now, it's just like, who is he again? And why is he here? I know, former UFC champion. I've seen him fight in UFC and all of that. But it's just, he does seem just out of place in TNA right now. The wedding video from earlier in the show was replayed. And then a graphic tease that it was up next. And I'm like, God, are they going to break again? No, it was actually time. What they did was they took down the ropes of the ring. They had a big red carpet that led to the ring. They had the ring post decorated with bouquets of flowers and things of that nature. Well, it did look wedding-y. Wedding-y? Is that a word? No, it's not, but I'm going with it. It looked like they were, you know, they made it up. It made it look good for a wrestling wedding. Sutter and Bennett come out together because Bennett, I guess, was the best man, and Bennett was still acting drunk and carrying his bottle. Then Rockstar Spud came out, and he's throwing flower petals, and he went to the ring with Aaron Rex. I think they said Spud was the flower girl, and I guess the idea was that Rex was also one of the, like, a groomsman. I don't know if they both were or what, but then Sienna and Maria came out. They were the bridesmaids, and then Matthews hyped the arrival of the bride for after the commercial break. Well, after the break, Van Ness comes out. Maria had a mic and introduced herself and said she was presenting the greatest wedding of all time. But first she needed her ring bearer, and she barked at Allie to get to the ring. Allie came out wearing a blue dress and was carrying the ring. And Sutter just made the most ridiculously over-the-top face to show just how in awe he was of how stunning Allie was in her blue dress. And it was bad enough that he did it initially. Well, they'd cut away, and they'd go back to him, and he'd still be making the face. It was like, oh, my God, this is so bad. It's part of the charm of this, I guess, is I was talking with John Moore about that last week, and some of the charm really is just Braxton Sutter's Horrible acting. Maria positioned Allie in a spot where she could see everything because, trying to rub it in her face. And then fans chanted for Allie. They had the man presiding over the wedding, and unfortunately, right away, I'm like, well, that's not going to be Eric Bischoff ripping off a latex mask. That's definitely not Eric Bischoff. Maria kind of wanted the guy to speed it up. Laurel read her vows she'd prepared. And then it was one little fun line here. She said that she dreamed of this since the first time she was just a little girl with a trust fund. Had fans chanting delete at this point. And then spoke about how the last 3 weeks have been magical. Sutter said that, I forgot to write my vows. And just asked the man, can we get through this circus? Then the minister, the man, whatever he was, the person presiding over this whole thing, asked if anyone objected. And the live crowd went nuts. They roared. Maria barked at the fans. I think she blamed Allie for not eliminating that part from the whole service. And then she called for Allie with the rings, and Allie tripped and dropped the rings. At first, I had to rewind it because I'm like, did Maria trip her? No, the idea was that she tripped. So I guess she and Braxton have that in common because that's how Braxton ended up getting to this, was that when he was talking with Laurel, he tripped and she thought that he was proposing. That, if you've missed it, honest to God, and he went along with it. Like, he tried to tell her it wasn't, but she wasn't listening, and so he just went this far with it all. Maria called Allie stupid. Fans chanted for Allie. Laurel said, I do. It was Sutter's turn. Fans chanted no loudly. And then Sutter paused, looked at the fans. Laurel's going, say it. Say it. And he says, I. And the fans started chanting, just say no. And then he says, I'm really sorry, but I don't. Laurel, I don't take you to be my anything. And then Sutter told Van Ness that he can't stand being around her. And he said, there's a guy out there that that she will make completely miserable one day, but he's not that guy. He's in love with somebody else. I always have been, and I always will be in love with you, Allie. For that, what, 2 months that they've known each other in the storyline setting. Of course, they're married in real life. But Sutter apologized for not telling Allie sooner. And then Maria reminded Sutter of whatever it was she had on Allie. And Sutter said Maria threatened to fire Allie and said he would never see her again if he didn't marry Laurel. Couldn't she get another job? I mean, it's not even like, oh, she's foreign and she'll lose her work visa and we'll have to. There was nothing. It was like, why can't she just go get another job? Or if you're so in love with her, wouldn't you just, hey, you're going to lose your job, but we'll make it work somehow until you find a job. I mean, I even on impact, I don't think they'd be crazy enough to say, I'll support you with just my impact wages, Allie. Ooh, that was a cheap shot. I'm kidding, I'm kidding. But yeah, it just the whole thing was like, really? That's what the explanation was? That was really, really bad. Maria then ended up mocking him for saying it, saying, looks like somebody put his big boy pants on. She fired Allie, just as she said she would. And then Allie immediately fired back that you can't fire me because I'm through working for the for you, you monster. So Allie quit that again, like awful. Maria wound up to slap Allie. Sutter blocked it. Bennett tried to get involved. He's drunk. Sutter punched him out. Allie attacks Maria. Brooke ran out and attacked. Well, I wrote attack Sutter. I'll have to correct that one. Brooke actually ran out and attacked Laurel because they've been feuding. Or no, I'm sorry, Sienna, that's what it was. She attacked Sienna, and then Robbie ran out. And I think the idea was that he went after Aaron Rex because they had been feuding. And then Sutter and Allie slowly walked toward one another. He dipped her. He kissed her. The broadcast team was gushing. Maria was fuming. And the Pope told Matthews that his honeymoon on Impact was coming to an end. And that's when Josh said, you know what? I'm out of here. And he dropped his he dropped the headset. And that was Impact. That was the wedding of the century or something. The undercard wedding of the century. I mean, a lot of, again, as many holes as you can poke in this, and as ridiculous as it was, and think of some of the awfulness we saw that led up to this with bad restaurant scenes that just looked so utterly foolish. I mean, just awful. I can't even, there's not enough negative adjectives to describe how silly that frickin' restaurant scene looked. How low budget it was, cable access. I mean, I guess I'm giving you more, but it for all of the bad things we saw, again, the live crowd. I haven't heard the Impact Zone, if you will. I haven't heard a TNA Impact Wrestling crowd this loud in a long time. They were into this. They were having fun with it. And so it was bad. It was corny. It's a pro wrestling wedding. And sometimes, as silly and as campy and as awful as things are, it works with a portion of the crowd. And certainly with this live crowd, it did. I can't say that it worked for me, but I also couldn't take my eyes off it. I hope that I don't want to see another wedding in TNA for a long time. I mean, we may get another one with Allie and Sutter now. I mean, who knows? But it, at the same time, it was fun. And again, very curious to see how this does with the viewership numbers. Hopefully those will be out later on this afternoon. Normally they would be. I think they're caught up now coming out of the President's Day holiday. So hopefully we will get those this afternoon sometime. We'll have the detail. If they are available, we will have them posted at ProWrestling.net this afternoon. But yeah, I do suspect, just based on wrestling history, that they're going to get an increase, hopefully a substantial one for their sake. And I've been talking about this being a couple weeks away. It's actually next week will be the first Impact taping, so I assume this is going to be one of those shows they bill as being live. It'll be same day tape delay. It ends just before the show goes on the air, that sort of a thing. So that's when the new creative era will begin. So I guess, yeah, this was in some ways the end of an era, with this being the final show before. And technically, yes, Dutch Mantel and Jeff Jarrett were employed again by the company prior to the last tapings, but people saying like they those two had very little to do with it. It was John Gabor heading the creative staff at that time. The scripts were done and ready before Jeff and Dutch were even involved. And so now you have Jeff, you have Dutch, you have Scott D'Amore, whoever else is on this new creative team. And now we're going to finally see, beginning next week, what they have to offer. And so I'm looking forward to that. I think it will be very interesting. But that's going to do it for today, everybody. Hey, take a moment. Please subscribe to our daily podcast. Rate and review us on iTunes. Help spread the word about ProWrestling.net and our All Access Daily podcast. A big thanks to everybody who has already done that. And for that matter, big thanks to everybody who does a simple retweet when I put out the link on my Twitter page at ProWrestlingNet. Have a great weekend, everybody.